Thank you for joining me on In Focus here on 107.7 The Wolf. I'm John Dampschroeder. My guest today is James P. Tressel, president of Youngstown State University. Of course, President Tressel is better known here on the border of Ohio and Michigan, where the two states literally fired shots in combat over Toledo. As the College Football Hall of Fame coach who led the Ohio State Buckeyes to a national championship. Perhaps even more importantly, in Northwestern Ohio, head coach Jim Tressel reversed an era of Michigan dominance over the Buckeyes with a 7-1 winning record in the game. So, President Tressel, you spent a life in an arena with a clear outcome, easily defined success or failure. How does a college president keep score? How do you know if you're winning?
Well, you know, that's an interesting one, John. It's a game that has so many more scoreboards, and it's in football. The obvious one, obviously, was the scoreboard on Saturday afternoon. But we had some other ones, our graduation rate and our kids and their career placement, or how many NFL kids and so forth, how many All-Americans or Heisman trophies. But as a college president, what's really interesting is the first thing that comes to my mind is that I want to have zero problems that can create risk, i.e. the safety type things. We spend so much time, you know, you look at some of the nightmares that have happened on college campuses or elementary schools or high schools or whatever, and every day that we can finish that we don't have any major problems, that's the first scoreboard. After that, we have a whole bunch of them, like, you know, how's our incoming freshman class? How's our graduating class? How many research dollars, you know, have we been able to drum up? How's our fundraising going? You know, there's a multitude that's even much longer than the number of metrics we had as a football coach, but that's what makes it exciting.
Well, you know, as a football coach, you develop guidelines commonly reduced to shorthand as trestle ball. The punt is the most important play in football because of field position, good special teams, strong defense, mistake-free ball control offense. Are you finding that you develop indicators like this as a university president to steer you toward those desired outcomes?
You know, I think we do. In fact, we're in the midst of strategic planning. The nature of change, whether it be in football or it be in higher ed, things change so much more quickly, but there are certain foundational things that stay the same. And so, you know, I still believe that in the game of football that the punt is very important play, because if you have a punt blocked for a touchdown, you probably won't win the game. If you have a punt run back against you, it's going to be hard. If you do the opposite to your opponent, et cetera, et cetera. In the college education business and so forth, I think there are some of the same foundational things as there are in football. We have to make sure these students understand that we genuinely care about them, that we have their futures in mind. And then I think it's fundamental that they know we're going to have high expectations, because they're going to go and compete in a very competitive world, and they're going to have to be well prepared. We talk to them a lot about the fact that they've got to really become financially astute, because some of the mistakes that I see being made in higher education are folks ending up with too much debt, going on into the next chapter of their life, a little bit hamstrung with their financial situation. That's a foundational thing that we talk about. But first and foremost, we want our students to know we believe in them, we care about them, and we've got their future, you know, in mind.
You know, the military history teacher that used to coach at Ohio State, the late, great Woody Hayes, would recognize that you now resemble Winston Churchill or Ulysses S. Grant as an extremely unlikely selection for the role you're in. In fact, the Youngstown Vindicator recently wrote that an unprecedented group of 31 area leaders came together to push for you as YSU president, and in that article they said, quote, "The board was never going to have the ability to come to this decision alone for fear of being the laughingstock of Ohio universities. So you started this position after the previous president resigned in just 7 months on the job and YSU was reeling. So the threat to the institution inherent in that crisis gives you an opportunity, if not an obligation, to lead major change similar to Churchill and Grant, doesn't it?
You know, it really, timing is everything, John. I've always believed that, whether it's in coaching or in anything you do. And it was a difficult time here at the university. It was almost a perfect storm. Governor Kasich had come in and changed the funding formula, which made it a little more difficult for places like ours. It was the right thing to do, without question. Our demographics were going down a bit. I became the fourth president in 5 years, so there was an instability at hand, along with some of the other financial realities. And so because of those trying times, I think the Board of Trustees, the faculty, the administration, and so forth, was maybe even more receptive to the urgency that I tried, you know, to bring to the situation. And, I just kind of came here with the same kind of attitude I did when I went to become a new coach somewhere, and that's A, build relationships, B, spend a lot of time trying to listen and find out what the people that are living it feel as if this is what we need to do, you know, to enhance the situation. And we just attacked it, and I think the timing was right for receptivity, and that was a good thing.
So you've launched a fundraising campaign called We See Tomorrow, and you have that strategic plan to draw a vision, frankly, on a blank canvas. I mean, you got a blank screen to begin.
Yep.
Give me a progress report on these two cornerstone programs of your presidency and then some insight on how they mesh together.
Well, we started about 4.5 years ago on our campaign. After spending 6 months here and going to the people and listening and going to the alums, and we hired a consultant to study a feasibility study for fundraising and so forth. After being here 6 months, we kind of launched the campaign quietly. You know, the way you do campaigns is you launch them quietly until you've raised a little bit of money, and then you really announce you're doing it. And so we quietly started on a $100 million campaign, which was a lot higher than we'd ever done here. I think we'd done a $40 million campaign in the past back in the early 2000s, 2008, I think it ended. But we set our sights on $100 million, began in really January of 15. As of June 30, here just a couple weeks ago, we were at, I think, $93,800,000. It was designed as a 7-year campaign, which I always knew it would go faster than that. But so at the end of 5 years, which will be December, I'm hoping we'll be over the 100 million mark, which will be exciting. So, you know, we'll give you an update as that gets closer. As far as the strategic plan, we've spent about 9 or 10 months with a strategic plan organizational team, which is comprised of 5 or 6 faculty, some staff, some administrators, some students, and really creating activities on campus to get people talking about what do they think the future needs to look like. We brought in 5 thought leaders onto campus, people who had been through strategic planning in higher ed, all the way from Scott Cowan, who was the president of Tulane when Katrina hit, and you know what they had to do. Jeanette Ortiz up at MIT when she started her own university. We had Ken Reardon in. We had, Mr. McGee, I can't remember his first name. I'm embarrassed. But anyway, they came and spent whole days on our campus and challenged us and met with constituencies and so forth to get us thinking about what does the future of higher ed need from us? What do we need to consider doing? And So this summer, after having had all of those discussions on campus, inviting a lot of collaborative input, we've now really started to move into some of the data-driven prioritization, optimization, thinking about what are our opportunities and so forth. At the end of this summer, we will be a little bit closer to where we think the future needs to be. We'll kind of present that to be vetted the entire fall semester, and then come winter of 2020, when we begin working on the budget for FY21, that's really when the budget allocation will come in parallel with the end of the campaign and how we're going to move forward from a strategic standpoint. So that's kind of our timeline.
What's the elevator pitch, the 30-second grab attention narrative that you use on the fundraising campaign, given that the strategic plan isn't quite done yet and you can't use that to sell benefactors at this time?
You know, like in anything, the first thing you want to find out is what are they thinking? And so what we always hear from our donors and our benefactors and our potential donors and so forth, it really are two things that ring out pretty consistently. One is, if it weren't for Youngstown State University, I don't know what my life would have ended up. So many of our very successful people were from this region. This was the opportunity their family could afford, and it catapulted them into a great life. The other thing that is fairly consistent is, they always say, if it weren't for Dr. So-and-so, Dr. Smith in biology, or Dr. So-and-so, my academic advisor, or whomever, but there inevitably seem to always be that one person that helped them believe they could. And so many times when we're talking to them, we're trying to find out from them, well, what is it that interests you? We do have some major components of our campaign, but that doesn't mean, you know, that's what we want you to solely consider. Is there something else that you think that you would really like to invest in at Youngstown State? And sometimes you'll find out that, you know what, I want to start a scholarship in this professor's name, or I want to, you know, create something physically, you know, that will recognize so-and-so. And so we don't really need a pitch typically, because the people have already lived Youngstown State, and it had a life of its own that might be different than what's going on here now, but it was differential in their lives. They also do like to come back and see what's changing and what's exciting and what's new, and I think that helps spur even, hey, I want to help more because I love the progress you're making.
Well, you're going into this strategic plan rollout with a lot of momentum. You're the lowest cost state school of the four-year schools in the state of Ohio. Value Line in Ohio recently rated you a value college, number 14 in the entire country, tops in Ohio. Onlinemasters.com ranked five of your programs on its best list. Your business administration master's program online outranks Ohio State, Miami, Toledo, and Bowling Green. How are you pulling this off?
Well, you know, it starts with good faculty. And we've got people here that their focus is on the student. Their focus is on teaching. Now, we do have some really good research faculty, but the majority of our faculty, they're really focused on undergraduate education. I mean, that's clearly what we're all about. Now, we have a couple thousand graduate students, and as you mentioned, our MBA program and some, our Master's of Social Work is really good, our Master's of Counseling is very good, but we are a undergraduate teaching-focused group, and they work extremely hard. They have a lot of pride in what they do. We're very lean. You know, unfortunately, we don't have as many of some things as we would like. Wish we had more academic advisors. Wish we had more mental health counselors. There are some things that I think we could support our faculty better if we had a little more help. But our people just love to roll their sleeves up, and they get to know the students. As you know, John, I went to Baldwin-Wallace, and I coached at Ohio State. So I've been at a small place and a big place and a bunch of places in between. What I love about Youngstown State, and that's why I think we've been fairly successful, is we have the intimacy of a Baldwin-Wallace, but we have the programs of an Ohio State. And I think that's a great advantage for us, especially at our cost.
It's no secret Youngstown is in the midst of a serious economic decline. The closure of GM's Lordstown plant, followed by news that the Youngstown Vindicator is closing and leaving Youngstown as the largest metro in America without a daily paper, is a real blow. Now, how important do you think it is the university, I guess, is the question, to turning around the prospects of such an important region of Ohio with more than 500,000 of our citizens living there?
You know, I think that one thing that became very apparent to me when I came here in 1986, the steel mills had just closed down in 77. I think there was a period of denial that, hey, they're coming back. Well, by 86, I think we had gotten to that point where, ooh, maybe they're not coming back. And that's when the area felt like the university needed to really step up. So again, you go back, John, to timing. You know, we came here at a good time, the first time we came, and it was fun to watch the university become a bigger part of things, for our successes in football to be a real community uplift type thing. Fast forward to now, GM is gone. The supply chain that fed GM, you know, is gone. We're even more important than we've ever been. Again, timing's pretty good. America Makes is here, which is the Center for the Study of Additive Manufacturing, 3D Printing. Youngstown Business Incubator is here. Our Innovation Center is under construction. We've got a lot of the petrochemical things happening on the eastern edge of the state that I think are going to be really differential. Our job is to make sure that we're doing research in the areas that could end up bringing jobs and opportunities to us, that we're creating the workforce that we need to create so that when those opportunities are looking along this whole shale crescent area and so forth, that we can provide the workforce that they need. So it's just a reminder, John, to me that we need Youngstown State University to be good, and we're going to work hard every day to make sure that we can do whatever we can do for the area.
Now, with that National Additive Manufacturing Innovation Institute, and the keyword, in my humble opinion, is national. When you've got literally a national asset, and the nation is counting on you lead us into this innovative manufacturing future, you're ground zero of not only a big Ohio hope, but a big national hope. How are you? What's your take on the outlook?
Well, the thing that you have to do, knowing that you have an important task, is that you have to align and collaborate with as many people as possible. Now, we've just spent some time down at the Oak Ridge National Laboratories, which is a big national research and development who's very tied with Battelle and so forth. We spend time with, we were just out at Stryker Medical talking about some of the things. Our people spend a lot of time over at the Wright State research area. In fact, one of my administrators, Mike Ripko, is on the board of the Wright State research group. We spend a lot of time at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, at the Vienna Air Force Base here north of us, trying to find out where can we be helpful in this additive manufacturing future. And we've got, fortunately, some really good companies here in town. HAPCO is the group that made the nozzle for the first car that was ever 3D printed. M7 Technology has that mega 3D printer the Youngstown Business Incubator and ourselves and America Makes, between us, we probably have, gosh, I'd be afraid to even say the numbers of millions of dollars worth of additive manufacturing equipment. Our job is to do the research, do the training, do the application, but collaborate. We can't do it by ourselves. We're fortunate to have a really good faculty in that area, nationally renowned in that area, they understand their importance to our future.
You know, all the flat panel screens that you see in offices and TVs, all of that was created out of research at Kent State University, where they had
liquid crystals.
Yes. Yep. However, that research put thousands of Ohioans out of a job because we didn't get license the technology and make it require manufacturing here. So we were a heavy manufacturer of televisions. We developed the technology that made a big job center obsolete, and the jobs are no longer here. Are we making sure on additive manufacturing that Youngstown actually powers Ohio growth, that the economy clusters around your resources and know-how?
You know, one thing that we are trying to work with our local manufacturers coalition, for instance, is that manufacturing 4.0 or future manufacturing or whatever, however it ends up being hybrid manufacturing or additive solely or whichever, is for our local manufacturers to start thinking about how it can impact what they do. And that's a hard thing for smaller manufacturers because they don't have an R&D department. They're just trying to, you know, meet the deadline of whatever order they got. And so that's one of the top discussions we have on campus, is how can we make sure we're not going to be simply an exporter of jobs, of information, of technology, of research, is that we're going to make sure that we're on the receiving end of. Now, the nice thing, I'll just use an example, Hometown Industries. Hometown is a group that is kind of a foundry, if you will, and they've really grown together with our faculty and our people here at YSU and the Youngstown Business Incubator that America Makes to 3D print molds, if you will, for Boeing and Lockheed and so forth. And the cost of machining in a foundry is amazing, from what I gather. I'm not an expert there. But when you can 3D print it, it's a huge business. There was a time when we had, I think, the second sand core 3D printer in the country, and we were sharing its use with Hometown Industry, who was actually out in the revenue-producing part of business, and we were in the research part. Now we're to the point, I think we have three, because we're building jobs from it, and our research is tying in and so forth. So I'm with you all the way. I wasn't aware of that with the liquid crystal thing. I really think that our people, along with America Makes and YBI, are very engaged with creating job opportunities here. But probably not limited to here because of our work with Oak Ridge National Labs and Dayton area, and the mandate that's implicit in the name America Makes is that these are things that, you know, we're going to be made in America.
Well, anywhere in America works because the manufacturing off liquid crystal is in South Korea.
Yeah,
so,
I hear you.
Yeah. You worked with one of the great ADs ever in Andy Geiger and a legendary university president in Gordon Gee. What have you picked up from that experience that you're using at YSU?
You know, I've told many people, and John, I don't know if you've ever heard me have this anecdotal thought, but, people asked all the time, you know, you guys made a big deal of the Ohio State-Michigan game and so forth, and, you know, it was a big deal. I mean, it was the biggest rivalry in my mind in the world, and we were fortunate to start turning the tide. So people ask me all the time, what do you think turned the tide? You know, for so many years, Michigan, whether it be the early years in the 1890s, early 1900s, they won, what, I don't know, 20, the first 22 or whatever. And then in the 90s, you know, the 1990s, you know, they were way ahead in the series. And I always answered the question this way. I said, I think there were three major things that have given us a chance to turn the tide, and we've got to keep it turned. One was when they hired Paul Brown as the head coach at Ohio State. At that time in the 40s, high school kids, the top players, did not go to Ohio State. They went to Notre Dame, Michigan, Purdue, Northwestern. They did not go to Ohio State until Paul Brown came, and he started turning the tide in the state a little bit, a significant amount. Number two thing that turned the tide was Andy Geiger came to Columbus and said to the group, I don't think you guys know how good you can be. And he really challenged the folks who had done it the same old way for so many years, and he challenged them to renovate the Ohio Stadium, challenged them to build the Jesse Owens track, challenged them to renovate the Woody Hayes Center, to build the Steelwood Gymnastics and Wrestling Center, et cetera, et cetera. I think Andy Geiger was key number two to the turnaround versus Michigan. And then the third one that really needed to happen to really get it total opportunity, and that was in 2002 when we stopped their ability to recruit in Ohio, kind of closed the door on the state. And from then to even now, the top players that we used to get some of them, but so did Michigan, the tide has really turned that most all of the top players in Ohio, if Ohio State recruits them, we have a good chance to get them. So I think you bring up the question, Andy Geiger, I think there's no doubt that his impact might not be mentioned quite enough on the history of Ohio State. And you talk about Gordon Gee. I think Gordon, he was maybe our best advertising salesman, you know, his energy and so forth. But I always appreciated that he was always asking you to stretch a little bit further. And I remember when he came back to Ohio State for the second time, he said, the reason I'm coming back is I want to move Ohio State from excellence. He said, we've always had excellence. He said, I want to move it from excellence to eminence. And I thought, you know what? That's a great challenge. And I've always appreciated him challenging us that way, and he was talking about the institution as a whole, but we felt like he was speaking to us as a football program as well.
Last question here. I know you're a religious man, so do you think divine providence has played out in your life in a way that put you where you need to be at exactly the moment you need to be there?
Oh, I think there's no question that I've been blessed at every turn. There are times when you don't always recognize things are a blessing, but there's no doubt God's had a hold of my hand throughout my entire life.
Well, President Tressel, thank you for making yourself available, and this was a great chance to understand what's going on at Youngstown State.
Well, I appreciate it, and one of these days we're going to have to get back and see what's going on in Gibsonburg.
There you go. Say hi to your brother.
The Golden Bears.
Yes, sir. The best coach that ever was involved in Gibsonburg High School athletics. Dick Tressel.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks, my friend.
Thanks to you.
You take care. Call anytime.
I shall. Thank you, Coach.
All right. Yes, bye. Sir. Bye-bye.